Welcome back to another episode of Off the Record, the Gerstner Adam Law Podcast. My name is Paul Adam.
This is Colin Gerstner. You know, let's start off with, a scenario that you're going to run into really quick. You know, you have a son that is about to turn, 14. He'll get his permit next year. What is your recommendation? What are you going to do? And what's your recommendation on how to insure a brand new driver?
Sure. So you need to call your insurance agent or however you get your own insurance. And you got to add him on as a driver on your own policy. One thing we run into sometimes is people say, oh, do I have to do that? It's going to cause my premiums to spike because I got, a teenager on. And they're right. Your premium is going to rise and it's going to suck, but you got to do it. And the issue is that there's not going to be coverage should your son cause a crash. We did talk about on a prior episode about permissive drivers. And so if you let a buddy borrow your car and they get into a crash, your own liability coverage would cover that. It's different if it's a household driver. Yep. It's commonly called a household exclusion. So in that instance, if you've got someone in your household that's a driver that's not covered under the policy, they're not insured. They're not. They don't meet the definition of an insured, and so you're really exposing your child, to a large judgment or awful things if you don't add them onto your policy.
Yeah. So it is an affirmative step. You do have to go through the process, add their name, and yeah, it is expensive to insure, especially 14, 15-year-old boys.
Another question I get from parents, mostly friends that are wondering, like, let's say my knucklehead son causes a crash. What's my exposure? Like, what am I at risk? Maybe they're business owners, worry about their business assets. And the short answer is that no, simply by virtue of the crash. And so there's this concept called vicarious liability, and that's where you're on the hook by somebody else's negligence. Most commonly see that like with employers, right? If employee, wrecks their work truck into somebody, then that business, the employer, is on the hook for the damages. That's not the case automatically for parents.
Right.
The exception would be if there's what we call a negligent entrustment claim. And in short, that means if you have reason to know that the public's at risk, simply by your kid driving, you could be on the hook if you let your kid drive anyway and they cause a crash. Let's say, he has a substance, abuse issue. He drinks too much, or he's already got racked up several speeding tickets already, things like that. Then you could have a separate negligent entrustment claim against you.
I'll tell you one kid that you won't have to worry about negligent entrustment. Rory Wisenhunt.
Oh, man. What a kid.
That guy.
Yeah.
I think he should get free insurance. I don't think there's any risk of that kid causing a wreck.
Man, probably even a discount on his parents' policy. Add him on.
It's like you bundle in Rory Wisenhunt and your premiums go down.
Yeah. No, I agree.
I want him on my policy.
Yeah.
I never thought of that.
There you go.
So let's flip this around a little bit. So we talked about insuring minors. Now tell me a little bit about, when minors get hurt, because this happens. We see it a lot where, you've got a family that's driving and they get hit and they're in an auto accident. You've got kids in the car, you got parents in the car, and everybody has some injuries. What's the difference between, a parent's injuries versus a kid's injuries and the remedy for that?
Sure. So the remedies are the same. They're entitled to all the same damages. We've spoken about medical bills. Pain and suffering, stuff like that. Legally, the mechanism is different. And so you're asserting a claim on behalf of a child, but, they're minors, not 18. And so if you file a lawsuit, you need somebody to be the party. So typically it's a parent.
Yeah.
And so in my case, the plaintiff would be Colin Gerstner, as parent and guardian of the minor that's hurt.
Yeah.
Another issue that comes up with minor injuries is settlement. Like, who has authority to settle a case?
Throughout this episode, I've been a little distracted, I'll be honest. And it's the bright red burning sunburn
on your forehead, Colin.
Oh, man. So normally I'm a hat guy. I wear baseball caps outside. I have no hair up there. I got to protect myself. But I recently went to my very first Renaissance fair with my daughter, who's in all things medieval and princesses. And at her request, I went dressed as a Scottish king. And turns out baseball caps don't go with a kilt and a tunic. And so I forewent the hat, spent all day outside. Despite my best efforts, ended up with a sunburnt scalp.
But you know what else is burning?
What is it?
The hot deals, the giveaways that we always do on the episodes. So if you've listened this far, make sure to take note of the code that's at the bottom of the screen. Go to the website, click on the tab, and then enter that code for a free giveaway. We're always changing up what we give away. You don't know what it's going to be, but I can guarantee it's something good.
And it's probably going to be signed by Paul.
People may not realize, too, is the time limitations on filing claims, or rather, not filing claims, but rather filing lawsuits when a minor is injured. And so typically when you would have, 3 years for a negligence lawsuit, to file that lawsuit, that clock doesn't start ticking until that kid reaches the age of 18. And then you have 3 years from that point. And so, you may have a kid with a really bad injury at age 10. The benefit, I guess, is being able to see that recovery drawn out over a much longer period of time. And then you can make a decision whether or not to file a lawsuit, after that kid becomes an adult.
Sure. Yeah, and to be clear for the viewers and listeners, that doesn't preclude you from settling a claim or filing a lawsuit before the kid's 18.
Right.
But it could be another tool, another option, where you wait, or maybe the kid waits until they're 18 and they can pursue the claim by himself.
So once you do get to settlement, though, that creates a few other issues that you wouldn't typically have in a normal case. So in Montana, when you settle a minor's claims, you've got different thresholds for amounts that you can settle at and different requirements, I guess, with those settlements. So, Colin, I guess, talk us through, an example of a very minor injury, minimal damages. You just want to move on with life. Couple thousand dollars. Any problem with that?
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously things to be aware of, but it's less complicated. Under the law, and most people know that if you're under 18, you can't sign contracts. You can't reasonably be expected to manage your own financial affairs, things like that. So the law has imposed a requirement that the funds be managed for the minor's benefit by an adult. Now, the thresholds for court approval, I guess I'll start there. So if you resolve a case for under $5,000, so what it currently is at, you don't need court approval. And so in that case, let's say the kid is minimally damaged, luckily, you get under $5,000, you settle, the parent can sign the settlement agreement and receive the funds without court approval. Now, the law still needs to be followed. The adult still needs to manage for the kid's exclusive education and benefit and support. Right. But it just skips a step of going to the court to get approval.
Yeah, and so, a lot of times we do see damages that exceed $5,000. And there is a couple ways to do it after that. On the more formal end, you're going to be, petitioning the court for a conservatorship and establishing a conservator to formally manage that money and make accountings to the court on an annual basis. But there's also other ways to do it, right?
Sure, yeah. And so if you settle for over $5,000, which is the overwhelming majority of cases that we've handled for minors, you have to get court approval. And so you reach a settlement before the parent or whoever it is can sign the settlement agreement and actually receive the funds. You got to file with the court because the court is, protecting the minor. They don't want this to be sold short. They want to oversee it to some degree. And so you file your petition, present the facts to the court, present the settlement amount, and the court has to give authority to settle for whatever deal you reached.
Yeah. I mean, in some of this is getting pretty dry, folks. So if you're sticking with us, we really appreciate you. There's a less formal way of doing it if the court allows it, which is court approval that may not require you to file annual accountings that just says, yes, we approve this amount for this minor. We're not going to make you jump through a bunch of hoops, but just make sure you're using that for the benefit of the kid.
You know, you're always concerned about, you know, child, you know, being injured and receiving money to compensate them for that harm, than the parents swindling it, right? And most parents wouldn't dream of that, but unfortunately, some might. And so typically it's a parent, but there are situations where it might not be a parent. So I've served as a conservator before for minors. There could be some family dynamics there. Where there's needed a neutral third party to oversee the funds, make sure they're used appropriately. Sometimes there's oddly enough, a conflict of interest, and that can be like where a parent causes the harm, right? It's driving recklessly. Good parent, but you know, it could be on the other side of the case, the defendant.
Right.
And obviously they can't be the one approving settlements that involve them.
Yeah, if they caused the injury, right. So no, there's a lot there. You know, occasionally we'll see parents make decisions to also structure those amounts. I've found these to be just great results, great outcomes for kids where, you know, there's certain payouts over time, but it lets these kids grow up and it gives them, you know, some money as they come into adulthood and, you know, are accruing expenses, whether that's college or a house or a car or, you know, just starting a family. And so we've seen that stuff play out, and those are the feel-good stories. And so, you know, I guess for our listeners, if you have questions on that, there's just a lot of ways to manage those settlement proceeds, or whether that's a judgment or a verdict coming in, and we've seen it all.
That's correct. Yep. Reach out if you got any questions. Always happy to, you know, talk with prospective clients and hopefully guide you through it. It can be complex, right? It can be scary. There's additional steps. And again, all good, all to protect the minors, but you know, rules and laws you got to comply with.
And it's more emotional when it involves your kids. It just flat out is. You know, it's one thing if you or I get hurt, Colin, but if our kids get hurt, that adds a whole nother layer of emotion and complexity to it, which can really cloud things. And so, yeah, that's something to keep in mind. So we appreciate you listening. Until next time.